We have a short slot now, and you could talk about general issues of Ona for a long time. So it could be that we'll continue this Hakdama sometime in the future. But for now, just in the brief time that we have, I'll give a little bit of introduction to an introduction about the topic of Ona. And it's a topic which is very halacha l'maisa in both senses. There are two, both senses of the word, there are two Isurim called Ona. They're both dealt with in this parak above Metzia. On the surface, they have very little to do with each other other than the word Ona. They address very different realms, but we'll discuss eventually. They have overlaps. Both of them are hugely lamaisa. And the second one, which we'll get to later, the second one is discussed in the end of the parak. We'll definitely make time to discuss it at some length because it's a crucial topic for everyday life, is the prohibition of Onas Tvarim. The Torah says, Lo Sonu Isha Samiso, Psukim in Parshas Bahar. So we're told we're not allowed to oppress, to afflict others. And what emerges from this Gemara is that there are two types of affliction that are dealt with. One is called Onas Mamon, and the other is called Onas Dvarim. So Onas Dvarim is super halacha l'maisa. That comes up every day. That comes up many times every day. That's something that really requires very constant attention in terms of Ben Adam L'Chavero. It's one of the most relevant issues one could have in that arena. So we'll certainly, the Mishnayos, the Mishnah at the end of the parak, talks about that, and there are a lot of Yesodos to discuss. So God willing, we will eventually get to that. But before that, the Gemara talks about monetary Ona. So monetary Ona is very relevant in a lot of ways also. If you're a businessman, if you're especially a vendor of some sort, you sell things, so then it's especially relevant. But it's relevant also to buyers, as we'll discuss. And it comes up in a lot of realms, and as we'll see, maybe we'll discuss today, maybe we'll discuss in the future, it's even relevant to daters. And it's even relevant to the decisions one makes when dating and when getting married. So it's hugely relevant, and God willing, we'll have the opportunity to discuss all of that. Sorry.
Is it not just by selling an object or even like a service?
Yeah, so what emerges, and we'll get into that hopefully today, if not today, maybe soon, that we see it applies by other things as well. It's a little bit of discussion how and when, but yes, from the short answer is yes, and we'll see, like even by marriage, because the terminology of Ona and Nekach Tos is relevant in that context as well. And we'll try again. There's even just an introduction should really take us much longer than we have for today. So today will be an introduction to an introduction. But over the course of these weeks, hopefully, we'll be able to see the Gemara. So we'll be introducing it interspersed with exposure to the various Gemaras. So essentially, one thing that's interesting to note is that the Gemara, later on, Gemara really in Ezehu Neshech, which we'll also get a little bit of exposure to later this week in our Ribbis mini unit, the Gemara talks about the question of really how to categorize the Isser of Ona. Not explicitly, but the Gemara has a relevant discussion. The Gemara asks, why do I need Ona to be spelled out in the Torah? So as we said, Ona literally means oppression, afflicting someone. So if I were to say Ona in the marketplace, you could probably think of many different things that would rise to that level, but in the Gemara's over here, it's understood in a specific context. So translating the concept into English, probably the best way to translate it is something along the lines of price fraud. That essentially you are deceiving the person with whom you are transacting on the matter of price. And you are therefore selling something, let's say, for more than it should go for. Or, conversely, you are buying something for less than it should go for. The Isser Ona applies in either direction. It happens to be that it comes up more often for the seller, especially because if one side is going to fool the other, if the other side doesn't know everything they need to know, it's much more common that it's the buyer who doesn't know what the story is, because usually the seller, for the most part, knows what the market is. So if there's deception in one direction or the other, it's more likely coming from the seller. So if you're...
Unless you're a used car salesman.
If you're a used car salesman, all the more. All the more
well,
salesman.
You're buying. Right. If you buy from someone and you rip them off so that you can make a bigger sale.
Right. So then theoretically that could happen. But it tends to be the case that the person selling has a little bit more knowledge. So theoretically, Ono cuts in either direction. If you're either overselling or underbuying. But for the most part, we talk about it, and by default, we'll talk about it from the seller's perspective, because that's just a more common scenario. And it applies also in terms of the overall value. So it's not just a question of you're charging too much or paying too little, but what if you're charging the right price for the item, but the item is deficient? So it's not actually worth what this item normally is worth. So that's also going to be an issue of Ona. And there we have the concept of Mekach Tos. It's a familiar concept. More people have heard of that than heard of Ona, but they're really linked ideas. Essentially, they have the same type of structure going on, that if I sell you an item at the normal price, but the item isn't worth the normal price because it's defective somehow, so then that creates a situation of Mekach Tos. The Gemara in Maseches Menachos talks about this, and the point is essentially that it's actually more chumer than straight out price problems, because as we'll discuss in a minute, there's a whole structure for what type of price differential invalidates the sale. But when you're dealing with a defective item, so any type of defect that the person would care about automatically is going to invalidate the sale. So in that sense, it's more chumer than price mistakes, because the price mistakes have a threshold, which we'll discuss in a second, and the item being defective doesn't have a threshold. Also, theoretically, there's no time limit. That, as we'll see in the context of Ona, when it's monetary, so then there is a time limit to how much you can go back on the deal. You have until you can verify the price, until you can show this item to an expert or to somebody who knows, you have that much leeway to be able to come back and reassess the situation. But if the item itself...
considered like Shtika Koda, or...
That's, we'll discuss exactly what the lambda is and why it should be different. But at least on the surface, that's what the Mishnayos talk about here. Right away, actually. The Mishnah Memtes and Mebeis, which is a good place to start for Ona. So this first Mishnah lays out both of these Yesodos in regards to the price differential, the ones that we just said are not applicable if the object itself is deficient. Now, just to focus on that for a second and come back to the price issue, so if the object is deficient, so first of all, there is a little bit of a question, what establishes deficiency? The concept of Mekach Tos would generally mean that if the person wouldn't have bought the item had he known about this defect, so that's where we get into trouble. But we have to have some type of way of knowing what that is. If the person just has crazy quirks, so then presumably that's not going to be relevant. So it's presumably what is perceived in that area as a defect is what's going to define that for our purposes. We'll have to look into a little bit more details about that. And there is a little bit of a discussion about what if you have the kind of defect that the person could figure out himself. It's self-evident. It's not the kind of thing that is hidden behind the cover that he's only going to discover sometime later, but it's something that if he did enough due diligence, and not anything fancy, if he just paid careful attention, he'd be able to discover it himself. So to what extent is the burden on the buyer that he should make a responsible decision?
To what extent is omitting information equivalent to lying?
Right, that's a little bit the question, right? So the question is, if you have an item that's defective and you're selling it, so presumably you're obligated to disclose the defect. The question is, so what if it's an imperfection, which the person can see? You can look at it right away and you can see that... So if it's something that's self-evident, are you obligated to spell it out yourself? And then if you don't, can he come back later and say, oh, I didn't know this was an issue? So that some of the Rishonim sounded like you're not obligated to spell something out which they can figure out on their own. The Rambam has been read by some. I'm not 100% sure it's the only way to read the Rambam, but some read the Rambam as saying you have to disclose everything no matter what. So there were some who wanted to, there were some contemporary Mechaberim who wanted to make a distinction that maybe it depends whether you're selling new items or used items. That if you're selling new items, so people expect the item is perfect. And if there's anything that's not perfect, so then you should be obligated to call that to their attention. But if you're selling a used item, as Menachem made reference to before, so then you perhaps can assume that the buyer knows used items are not perfect. And if it's something that they can't figure out, they would only know once they use it for a few months and they'll realize the problem, so then that you'll have to point out. But if it's something they could spend a minute looking at it and try to see what's wrong, so then maybe that is their obligation. It happened to me, but the Dihav Ovda, a few years ago, I was, this morning, I believe because something went wrong with my car, but a few years ago, I had a car where there were problems, and I took it to the mechanic, and the mechanic told me that it was the most things wrong he's ever seen in a car, and that it would cost more to fix all the things than to buy a new car, and it's not worth fixing it. It's just overwhelmingly overwhelmingly in trouble. So it was a very depressing diagnosis, but the car still had a few more miles in it, so I drove it to Yeshiva. And for some reason that day, as I pulled into the parking lot, so the security guard asked me if I had any interest in selling my car. So I told him that I have to be honest with you, I just came back from the mechanic, and he just told me that my car has more problems than he's ever seen and it's not worth fixing. So he said that no, he knows how to fix things, or he knew, knows people knows how to fix things, and it's worth it for him. So I happened to have in my hand, you know, the whole list of all the problems that the guy had said. So I said, here's the list, you can read what everything's wrong and you can decide if you still want it. So he read the list and he told me he still wants it, and he bought the car, he paid money for it. So I asked him last week, how long has it been? It's been 2 years. He's got only nachas from the car. So people have different needs, and people have different ways of valuing things. So here was his full disclosure of everything that had been said about it. He decided he wanted it anyway, and he knew what he was talking about. Somehow he made it worth his while, and he's continuing to use it without any problems for 2 years somehow. Anyway, so there are market issues. Now, a very complicated question that really impacts how these business deals have to be transacted, and this is something we'll have to follow up on a little bit more, is that there is another issue that could be relevant. That you talk about Onah and Mekachtos, so let's say fine, it only applies if it's the kind of thing that would have invalidated the sale. If the person would have chosen not to buy this item had he known about X, or maybe not to pay the price that he paid had he known about X, so then fine, that could invalidate the sale, or at least require an adjustment of the price. But let's say it's the kind of thing that he would not have changed his mind had he known. So does that mean you have no issue? Not necessarily, because there is another issue called Knevis Das. So Knevis Das means a lot of things, but one of the things included in Knevis Das is I cannot give somebody a false impression that's going to make him unjustifiably positive towards me, unjustifiably grateful towards me. So for example, in non-business transactions, there are a lot of examples in the Gemara that if I pretend like I'm doing somebody a favor, but I'm really not doing him a favor, I'm making it look like I'm going out of my way for him, but really it's not out of my way, so he's going to be grateful to me for no good reason, and I'm purposely trying to elicit that reaction. So that's an issur of Gnevis Das. So you could theoretically have Gnevis Das in this business context as well, because let's say as follows. Let's say I sell you a car, right? And I sell you the car for $1,000. And the car is worth $1,000. And I tell you, though, or I give you the impression that the car is actually worth more. I'm giving you a great deal because I like you. So I'm selling you a car that's worth $2,000 for $1,000. So it turns out, what's the truth? The truth is it's really worth $1,000, and he paid $1,000. And had he known that it was worth $1,000, he still would have paid $1,000 for it. He didn't. There's no real mekachtos issue. So what's the issue? The issue is that he thinks that he's getting a great deal because I gave him the impression it's worth $2,000. So there's no monetary difference. He paid the same as he would have paid, but he's a little bit more grateful to me, and he thinks nicely of me because I gave him the impression that I cut him a beneficial deal. So even if that's not the mekachtos or no, that could be an issue of gneivas das, and that could have some significant implications. So God willing, we'll have to revisit that topic. But in terms of ona on the price issue, so essentially, the Mishnah tells us, it's a little bit of a discussion in the Mishnah, but we find the halacha lemaisa, that there are three gradations. Not all of them are as lemaisa as the others. But essentially, if there is a price differential in either direction, benefiting the seller or the buyer, that amounts to more than a sixth from what the market value is, so then the sale is bottom. The sale is no good. If it is exactly a sixth, which sounds a little difficult to come up with, and indeed it is, and we'll talk about that, so then the ona part is bottle. They have to reverse the extra price differential, but the sale itself is still binding. You see, by the way, in this discussion, how the first Mishnah and the Perek and this Mishnah are connected. You see how the topics flow from one another, because in the first Mishnah, Hazav, we're talking about under what circumstances is a deal reversible. At what point, if two people agree to buy, sell something, at what point can they go back, at what point can they no longer go back? So here, this halacha of ona is really being introduced in that context. It's very relevant that if there was a lack of meeting of the minds in terms of the price of the item, so at what point does that reverse the sale? So if it's too extreme, if it's more than a sixth, so then the whole deal falls apart. If it's exactly a sixth, the deal stays, but the price differential has to be corrected. And if it's less than a sixth, less than a shtos, so then the sale is good. The sale doesn't...
What does that mean, corrected? Does it mean the whole sixth that you give me?
That's what it means, presumably. Now, the problem is...
It's less than a sixth.
Yeah, the problem is less. If it's less than a sixth... Right, no, I have to... Presumably the whole thing. The problem is figuring it out gets tricky. And that exact scenario, that it's going to be exactly a sixth, is very difficult to see in real life. That's why the contemporaries forum write that because of the variabilities in the market, it's pretty unlikely that you have that situation in contemporary life. Yeah, that you can figure out how the number comes exactly to have a 1/6 differential. That's very difficult. So really focus on the other two halachas, that if it's more than that, then everything is batel, and if it's less than that, then there's no correction. Now, one of the things we'll have to discuss is, does that mean it's mutter to overcharge or underpay by less than a sixth? So that's a suffix in the Rush, and there's a discussion in the Ramban and others. And the short answer is, no, it's not mutter, that it seems to be that there is a differentiation here between the isser and the consequences. So we have prohibition of ona, and we have consequences of ona. They're not necessarily tied in together. You can violate the isser without having the consequences, and you could have the reverse also, because if somebody makes a mistake, which could also happen, he honestly doesn't know that there was a price mistake, so that he's not in violation of any isser, he didn't do it on purpose, but the sale still is subject to whatever corrections are necessary. So the consequences can be triggered without the isser, and you can very much have the isser without triggering the consequences. The Ramban proves this from the fact that the Gemara says there's no ona by karka, even though it sounds like from the Torah explicitly that there's ona by karka. So he explains that there's an isser of ona by karka, but the consequences don't come into play in the same way. And that's a machlokas rishonim. Does that mean it never comes into play? The Rashbam understands that karka, people have different type of attitude towards. They're willing sometimes to pay more than the value to a tremendous degree. So the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam seem to paskin that no amount of mistake is going to reverse the deal. And the Ramah passes like the Rush and Nasser Nazir Rishonim that no, if it's a 50% differential in karka, that would also be reversed. But the basic point being that there is this difference between the price differential, the Isser, and the consequences. So we're going to have to end in a second. Just want to make one point clear, because this point often gets misunderstood, that this 1/6 difference, that's between the market price and what you're charging. This does not address how much profit you can make. This is not the difference between wholesale and retail. Somebody, if the seller himself paid X for the item, this is not addressing how much more than X he can sell it for. There may be other reasons to limit it, and indeed there are other issues in terms of setting reasonable prices for the community and avoiding price gouging and the like, but that's not exactly what we're talking about here. In fact, this is kind of the opposite of that. I'll explain in a second. That we're talking about whatever everyone else charges, that's the market price, so that has to be in sync. But it's not a question of how much profit you're marking up on top of what you pay.
You don't have a monopoly. Process,
right, so if you're a monopoly, so then that's a whole different issue. That's presumably not subject to ONA. It probably is subject to possible price gouging issues, which is a whole different level. So price gouging and ONA are really kind of mutually exclusive, because the idea of price gouging is that you can't get this item anywhere else, so I'll take advantage
there
of that.
There is no market.
Right, I'll take advantage of that by driving up the price. And ONA is really the opposite. That the whole point of ONA is that he could get it somewhere else, and he doesn't realize that because he could have went down the block and paid less, so he's entitled to that price, and he's not mocho paying you the extra because he could have gone there. So essentially they apply in kind of mutually exclusive terms. That's the whole point. He doesn't know. So he's misled. He doesn't realize that the market is this much. Now there are all kinds of nuances and variations, so we'll have to see them a little bit. But it's just interesting to point that out, that there are issues with setting your monopoly or your other prices too high. A different kind of concern, but in a sense they're mutually exclusive concerns. The one is about taking advantage of the fact they can't do better anywhere else, and here ONA is really about the opposite, that he could do better elsewhere. He doesn't know that he could do better elsewhere, and you're exploiting his lack of knowledge. That's where we have this specific issue. So there's a lot more to say about this. We'll have to both continue learning the Gemaras and having these Hakdama discussions dispersed throughout. Stay tuned for future